Hello, and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast with Rob and Jason.
Welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, October 13th, 2014. You're listening to episode 124 of this ridiculous show. My name is Rob. Sitting over there is Jason. Hi.
Hello.
Hey, we're back at it again here.
Indeed.
Yeah. So, episode 124, almost 125. We're one less than 125. I don't know. I like milestones like that.
You do.
Yeah, for some
25% of the way to episode 200.
Yeah, well, it would be
meaning from 100.
From 100. Yeah. Okay, all right. Yeah,
actually, right now we're 24% of the way because we haven't recorded 25 yet.
Right,
which we won't for 2 weeks.
Right, so. In 2 weeks, we will have hit 125.
Coming up on a new episode of.
But from the listener's point of view, it would only be 1 week, dude. Right. It's like time travel. It's like time travel, dude. I love time travel.
It's like time travel.
Yeah. Halloween's coming up.
Yeah.
Do you know, are you having a party?
No.
You're not going to have a party?
No.
You have this new house. You should have a party.
No.
You should have a party.
You want me to have a party because you want to dress up and go to a party.
Why don't you have a party, dude?
Because we've got kids and it's Halloween.
Well, you just send them to your mom's house.
They're
have a party.
Going to go trick or treat.
Have a party.
No.
Have a party. Have a party.
It's not going to happen.
You should throw a party.
Nope.
It's a nice new house. Have a party.
We'll throw a party at some point. Not for Halloween.
Jerk. It would be so easy, though, to have a party. Just have a party.
No, because the kids won't be easy.
All right, so we'll be over, what, like 8?
You can come over. That's fine. It'll just be you guys.
Just dressed up.
Actually, we may not even be here at that point because my mom might come down.
Okay.
So after the kids trick-or-treat, we may go somewhere else.
So we'll just bring a cooler and get drunk in your driveway.
That's fine.
Make all your neighbors angry.
Yeah, I don't care. I don't know them.
Dude, you should totally have a party.
Not going to happen. Why don't you have a party?
Because our house is old and we're grumpy.
Well, lots more space though, because you like
no, your house is like twice the size of ours.
No, I mean that it used to have. You like took everything out.
Yeah,
and I'm pretty sure my house is more than twice the size of your house, if you count finished floor area.
You might be right. You might be right. This is a big house, dude. So, you bought a big house.
We did on purpose, actually, because we used to live in a small house and it wasn't cool. Yeah. So we bought a big house, and now it's
especially
cool.
With a family of four and a dog and a cat.
So yes,
yeah.
So yeah, that's what we've been doing. So all right, well, good show.
You should totally have a party.
Nope. Hey, so here's what I've been playing lately.
Yeah.
So last week we talked about the games from Grand Con.
Yeah.
So this week I have been not playing any legit games. Mm-hmm. What I have been playing, though.
Hearthstone?
I have played Hearthstone, but I wasn't going to mention it because I didn't want to get all ragey. But anyways, I've been playing games. I have been playing Fun Farm or Farm Fun.
Farm Fun.
Not by the actual rules. I was playing it with my son.
Mm-hmm.
And all we basically did to play the game was I would put a card down with an animal on it, and mm-hmm. then he would have to roll the color, and he would just keep rolling until he got the color, and then we would lock it in, and then he'd roll the other die until he got the color,
mm-hmm.
and then he'd get to take the animal and play with it, and then we'd move to the next one. And we did that all the way through, and he thought it was awesome because he kept getting plush animals out of the deal, like squishy ones.
Uh-huh.
And then the other game we've been playing is... Thomas the Tank Engine's Pop-O-Matic Bubble.
Whoa.
Game.
Whoa.
Yeah. I got it at Five Below for $5.
Nice.
$4 maybe even. It was 100% worth the purchase. Basically, it's Sorry.
Okay.
It's Sorry.
But Thomas?
Yeah, with Thomas. And, like, usually, so the way we play it right now is there's four, and there's Thomas, Percy, Toby, and James are the engines on there, and each one has a different colored peg.
Are all the engines men?
No, there's quite a few girl engines.
So okay, right.
There's more men than others. I mean, the show is 50 years old, so that's not really surprising.
Okay.
But there are definitely quite a few women engines now.
Okay, good.
But yeah, back in the day, I think there was only one or two.
Thomas has been around that long?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
I thought it was like a product of the 80s and 90s.
No, and it actually... even before that was called the Railway Series by this Reverend Michael something.
Hmm.
Which I always thought was interesting that a reverend wrote that. I never understood that. Like, it's just, yeah. So it was always about Thomas and his friends on this island. And then, Brit something, I don't remember, some lady, from Britain, actually, which is funny. She took it and, turned it into a TV show. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is over the years, there's always been somebody, a narrator,
mm-hmm.
and that narrator's changed over the years. But, two super interesting ones were George Carlin was a narrator for quite a while, and Alec Baldwin was a narrator for a while. I've never heard an Alec Baldwin episode, but I don't think there are many of them,
mm-hmm.
but I have heard some George Carlin ones, and it's really weird to hear him announcing
it. Yeah,
because,
man, I don't remember Thomas really at all when I was a kid.
I don't think it was our type of thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So... Huh. Like, I don't think it was out there as much as it is now.
They must have increased their marketing and stuff in the last 20 years.
Yeah, and there's lots and lots of stuff now for Thomas. It's insane how much stuff there is for Thomas now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the original way they used to do it was real trains.
With
faces on them, and the eyes would move and stuff, but the mouse wouldn't move.
And I've seen pictures of that and, like, video of that, and it's creepy. It's kind of creepy.
It's a little creepy.
Yeah.
So then they went through a transition period where they covered the faces with animation.
Okay.
But everything else is the same. So it's still real sets. And then now the new episodes are 100% digital.
Okay.
Because it's way easier to do that.
Well, sure. Yeah.
They actually took old episodes and would go back and replace the faces.
Oh, really?
To make them and then change the voices. Because the original voices were always the announcer doing all the voices, even the women voices.
Oh, so, interesting.
Yeah.
Huh.
We always laugh because there's this engine named Rosie. In this thing, she's like, she's pulling the carnival special, and she's like, "I'm pulling the carnival special." Like, I mean, she sounds like a dude pretending to be a girl, which is what it was.
Sure, that's funny.
So anyways, it just cracks us up, and it's gotten a lot better now. Okay. Now the girls actually are girls.
Good.
But so that was a lot to talk about Thomas. But anyways, sure. So about halfway through the game, Josiah will get done. Like, he basically just wants to pop the bubble and tell me what number he sees, and then I move the pieces.
That's really the best part of Sorry. Yeah.
And then after a while, he's like, "No, Thomas goes here," and then he moves them all back to the starting position because then they're with their little pictures.
Oh.
And then he usually pops the bubble for about 5 more minutes, and then we stop playing.
Okay.
So, yeah. Gonna get Don't Break the Ice out this weekend again, I think, and maybe Click Clack Lumberjack.
So, Click Clack Lumberjack. Oh yeah, that one. Yeah,
I'm pretty excited about trying that one. So he'll love that.
Yeah,
because you get to use an axe and
chop and down
stuff down.
Yeah, that's so, pretty sweet.
You've been playing anything else?
No, not really. No, I did finish putting together a prototype though for Card Game Simulator, the card game. I've got my prototype.
I
want to
play that.
Yeah. So I'll need to bring it to work, and we can play it on lunch one day soon. I mean, it's I haven't printed it and cut it out, but I mean, the cards, it's ready to print, ready to cut.
Well, that's the easy part.
Right, yeah. So I just need to sit down in front of the TV and do that. Also, I got another publisher rejection for Finish It. Submitted to a publisher that our friend Neil recommended.
You already did that and got rejected?
Yeah, dude.
It was like a day. Did I not send that to you? Like,
yeah, you sent that to me yesterday. Yeah, well, you know, you send the guy an email, you tell him about the thing, he replies back, tell me more. I send him a link to the Google Drive document that has all the card details and, you know, all the rules and stuff, and he looks at it, and he came back to me today and said, "Hey, you know, that's a really cool idea. Not sure that it's right for us right now, but best of luck to you." So, okay, that's fine.
Wow. That publisher is great.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to send them something.
Yeah.
Because that's an amazing response time.
Yeah, you know, and hey, I'm extremely thankful. They obviously took some time and looked at it and considered it and seriously considered it is the impression that I got. And the impression I got is what matters.
Right.
You know,
that's true.
So whatever the reality was, it doesn't matter.
Right.
He was courteous and kind and encouraging and just said, "Hey, it's not right for them." So fantastic.
That's awesome.
So that's okay. Still on track to get that up on Game Crafter. Of course, with all the tree business and car shopping and we bought a new roof for the house. So that's going to be installed later, probably later in October.
Cool.
Yeah. So that'll be happening. So that took up some of my weekend time and my computer time. So, almost ready to go, though, with getting finished up there. Just need to get the final pass and the rules done with Laura's help. And then we'll do that final upload and order a couple of copies and get it up for sale. So
awesome.
Hopefully, by the time this episode posts, we will have ordered, at least done our order of our first copies.
To test it before you put it for printing.
Yeah. Yeah, so.
I mean, put it for sale.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so that's about it for me.
Cool. Yeah. Well, let's move on to our feature.
Our feature, right.
So this episode, we decided we were going to play a bunch of voicemails.
Our voicemail extravaganza.
Yeah, and then also some other questions that we have as well. We've got some other questions from people.
We've been bugging people to send us voicemails, to call in and leave us voicemails at 770-TEL-BTG. We didn't get the variety of calls from the variety of callers that we'd hoped for. So come on, listeners, give us a call.
Yeah, 770-TEL-BTG.
Seriously, guys. Just even if you just call and just shout expletives at us for a minute. That's okay. I can bleep it out. It'd be funny.
I mean, I would listen to that.
Yeah, right. So, 770-TEL-BTG. Give us a call, leave us a message. So we've got some to listen to tonight. We'll start with the short, simple ones, and then we kind of have an epic tale of epic series of voicemails to deal with that we'll talk about when we get to that.
Yes, we will. Yeah. All right, so the first one here is from Mr. Roger Hicks.
Hey, all right.
Roger, here we go.
Hey, Rob and Jason, this is Roger Hicks of Today in Board Games. And first I want to say this Google Voice thing is awesome because I usually listen to your episodes while I'm out driving around, and I no longer have to remember what I was going to comment until I get home. So I just leave it on the voicemail line, and that's awesome. Anyway, I just listened to the pitch of Negotiating Crevasses, and just wanted to mention a project that was on Kickstarter last year called Larceny that does something similar. So take a look at that. The other thing I was going to mention, you said that the game would not publish well on GameCrafter due to the size. You may want to check out drivethroughcards.com. I know Daniel Solis does a lot of his games that way, and it's specifically designed for larger card games, looks like. So take a look at that. That might work well for you. Hey, thanks, guys. Have a good one.
All right, that one's directed at you, Mr. Rob.
Yeah, cool. Larceny, he said it was Larceny on
Larceny, case? Yep.
Larceny. Okay, I haven't heard of that. I'll have to look that up. I don't know. I'll have to look it up. I don't know anything about it. But drive-through cards, you know what? I didn't even think of that. But I didn't know that they did well with larger games. Because one of my complaints about the GameCrafter is that they don't have really a good box size. They have a box that it will fit in.
It's not necessarily good box size.
Yeah, but I mean, it'll work. But if drive-through cards has a better solution for that, that would be really great. So maybe I should look at that. All of my artwork and my box layout and everything is already formatted for GameCrafter, but I guess I could adjust. Yeah, okay, that's a good idea. I'll look at that. I don't know anything at all about the marketplace there or how any of that works. Gosh, if their shipping costs would be better too, though, that might be...
That could be good.
That could be really good. Huh, this might be a good opportunity just to experiment and try it, I guess. I also don't know what their card format is, because with GameCrafter, you know, it's nice that you can just upload one file per card, but with that first order we ever did back to Superior POD, we had to do a big layout sheet for it, you know?
Yeah, POD was... That was cool.
A real pain, so I'll need to look at drive-through cards to see what their requirements are. It might be too late for me, since I already have it all formatted, ready to go for GameCrafter, but... for whatever my next online sale project might be, maybe I should just make it a point. Maybe I should just do a project. Hey, maybe Card Game Simulator, I should do that with the intention of doing it on drive-through cards. Just to have the experience of giving it a shot. Maybe I'll do that.
Idea.
Yeah, assuming the game works and the game's fun and plays well, maybe that should be my next online project.
So, Larceny on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Made $15,000.
Whoa.
Holy crud. It is a game about planning the perfect heist. What's interesting to me is when I look at this, the artwork is pretty not finished, which is a little frustrating, actually, because, you know, like other games I've seen not have as good results with not finished artwork yet. Theirs seems to be okay. So maybe it's because it was a party game. People were really excited about it, but hopefully it's a cool game. They've got a lot of content on their Kickstarter page about how to play it, pictures of playing it and stuff.
Is it like kind of making up stories and stuff? Or
you're trying to plan the perfect heist.
Okay.
So,
all right. I'll check it out when I get home tonight.
So feel free to check that out on Kickstarter. You can't back it because it already happened a year ago.
Yeah.
But good for them.
What was the base price?
Can you see 20, 20 bucks.
20 bucks? Yep. Okay.
It was going to retail for 25. They did 20 on Kickstarter 20, okay. for the push. Right on. You know?
Cool.
All right. And
yeah, moving on. Next up.
Next one. Shoe.
Greetings, everyone. Jason, Rob, Builders. It's Shoe again. I hope you're not tired of hearing my voice. So I was listening recently to the episode release, and it was the part about pay to win that I wanted to comment on. And as a serious, I don't want to say serious, I was never a serious Magic player. I have never won a tournament. I've only once entered a Pro Tour. But I played it quite heavily and did what some would say was pay to win. But I would like to think that rather than pay to win, it's more of a pay based on how into the game you are. Magic the Gathering does, if you are a competitive player, have a pay to win element. But unless you are trying to build the top decks, what you actually are paying for are experiences and options. I find myself, when I'm buying more cards that cost an exorbitant amount of money, I'm paying for the experience of running that card in my deck. Those types of games, if you want to just pay cheaply for an experience, they have decks where you can spend 20 bucks and get two decks that are full decks that play really well against one another, and it's a two-player experience for $20, and you never have to buy anymore. The cool thing I think about those types of games is not that they are pay to win. They're pay for an experience. If you want them to be a lifestyle, you can put that kind of money in. And that's pretty much all I've got. Thanks for listening.
I think that's an excellent point.
Yeah, that is. I mean, I don't know that I totally agree with it, but I think it's a good point.
So that it's not pay to win, it's pay for the specific type of experience that you want.
Right.
You can buy just a base deck and you can play a game that is fun to play. Or if you want to spend a bunch of money to really, really, really super customize the game to match your specific goals, it gives you that option.
Right. So I agree with that, but I guess for me it's tough because I've always had the competitive bug with that stuff.
Yeah.
So to me, you're buying the pieces not because it sounds like fun to play that deck,
mm-hmm.
but because it sounds like you could win with that deck.
Yeah. Yeah, see, that's my question too, is that if I'm going to spend the money for that pre-made deck, am I going to be competitive against another player with a custom-built deck? Assuming our skill levels are the same. I don't know.
And I think with the Magic game, I would agree with Shoemore, only because with Magic, like, I never tried to be competitive. It was about playing with friends, and we would have our little, you know, in-house tournaments. It was just kind of goofy. But, I mean, in general, it wasn't about being competitive. It was when I found the other games that I decided to buy stuff to be competitive.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's a very good point. I mean, I think that for some people, that's why they pay money. For others, they pay money because they want to win.
Yeah.
The good example of that actually was we had a Dice Masters tournament this weekend.
Oh, yeah. I forgot you played in that. Yeah.
So, yeah.
You won again, right?
I got first again. So, yeah it was cool.
Hey.
So that is, and technically we played, it's a 3-round tournament. That's just how it's set up by WizKids. We could have played a 4th round. There were 2 undefeated people, myself and Bob, and Bob's the other very stellar player there. So it's for 3 months, for 2 months I was first, then it was him and I, and then this month again, it was him and I. So that's been pretty awesome to get first every month.
Yeah.
And to always get the prize. We're kind of a shoe-in now, both of us are, for the Phoenix Force card that you get at the end. As long as we show up for the next 2 months, we will win that.
Yeah.
Which is cool. It's great. I'm super excited about that. I mean, we worked really hard to get that.
Sure.
But
yeah, you guys earned it.
There was a guy there whose first time at the tournament, he was a good player. I just want to say, he was a good player. I looked at his deck. It was okay. It wasn't anything crazy fancy, but it was okay. He had some good cards in it, and he played them very well. And when him and I played, you play 3 matches and the winner is, you know, the winner, whoever wins 2 matches wins the thing, right?
Yeah.
He beat me first round. Like,
oh, okay.
Whoa. Like, it was close. He had 2 hit points left. I got knocked out. Like, and the thing that pushed him over the edge was, in his pack, he opened Green Goblin Gabi, the ultra rare.
Oh, yeah.
He had 1 die for that. 1 die. That was all it took.
Yeah.
Like, so that to me made me feel a little bit more like pay to win there, because granted, he didn't. He just got lucky.
Sure.
But again, he was a good player. If he'd been terrible, it wouldn't have mattered, but he made good decisions, and he had a pretty solid deck otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And but
he
yeah,
if he hadn't pulled that card, he probably wouldn't have won.
And if he hadn't pulled that card, he would not have won the first game. There's definitely not. Just be, and the reason I can confidently say that is because he had 2 hit points left when he killed me.
Yeah.
With that card,
right?
And the only reason I was down still in hit points is because of that card.
Yeah, and the more money you spend on those things, the more likely you are to get those ultra rares. Right. Just pure statistics.
Now you could get lucky, right? You could buy 2 packs and get 2 ultra rares.
Of course.
But the statistics on that are pretty bad.
Yeah.
So you know that. But what was funny was I actually was getting a little disillusioned with the game. But seeing kind of the different kind of deck he was playing. While he was still competitive, even if he hadn't had that piece, he would have still been competition, right?
Yeah.
It wouldn't have been like I steamrolled him.
Yeah.
And that felt good. Like, it was cool, like, to sweat it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I liked that again. So,
yeah.
So I'm going to stick with the game for a little while longer and hope that that keeps continuing with the next set.
Have you bought boosters on your own outside of the tournament in a while?
No.
Okay.
There's no reason to. Other than the fact that there's, one ultra rare that I really want, which is Gabi.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason for me to. I mean, sure. I have more than everything else I need. I actually need to section off my stuff to just figure out what I can get rid of.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And I think I'm done with the game.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're welcome to pick through what I've got if you're interested in buying any of that, but anything you don't want, I'll just probably take back to Fanfare and sell.
Yeah. I could probably take it and sell it for you at Fanfare.
Sure.
Especially during the tournaments. So... might actually be able to box up that starter set and sell it off to someone, because I mean, your cards are all still pretty new.
Yeah,
so starter sets still sell for 15-20 bucks. So
yeah,
but yeah, it's been a good game.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm gonna keep going with it for now. Like I said, I mean, it depends if the next set really blows.
Yeah.
And really makes the game. But like, I've seen some stuff in the next set, and already like there's a Kitty Pryde card.
Mm-hmm.
And her card basically nerfs Black Widow.
Yeah. Like,
her ability is spend a mask that the target character cannot attack next turn, which means that Black Widow is useless.
Yeah.
And if that's all you have out, you're completely hosed.
Right.
So, like, I'm glad to see they're already balancing stuff that they've found as problems. So, that's
yeah,
great.
Good.
It's good for them.
It's good.
All right. Now, the next one, we have another voicemail here from our pal Andy Lennox.
Good old Andy.
Here he comes.
Hey, Rob and Jason, it's Andy Lennox. I had a quick question, maybe not so quick. I've been playing a lot of games lately where it seems like the game design is carefully tweaked to keep all the players in the game at all times. Now, this might seem like a good thing at first, but it really seems to hose later gameplay. So, for example, I've played this game 1, 2, 3 times. I'm having fun. Everybody seems to be doing pretty well at it. You know, this person wins, that person wins. But after multiple plays, I should be getting better at the game. I should be exerting some sort of mastery over the game. But because the game is so cleverly balanced, there's no real way to excel. And it seems like a lot of games do this to keep all the players in the game and make the first few plays really dynamic and interesting, but it sort of limits the long-term appeal of the game. And I was wondering if you guys have noticed this too, or if I'm the only one who's having this problem. One example is Rise of Augustus. I love this game. It's really fun. It's commonly known as the gamer bingo game. But no matter how many times I play it, no matter how many times I play it with different groups of friends, nobody seems to be able to grab onto a strategy that works better than other strategies. It's almost totally random seeming after as many plays as we played it. We still have a good time with the game, but I'd like to know what your thoughts on that.
It's a great question.
Yeah, what do you think?
Well, I mean, my first thought is, like, it's funny because we actually mentioned before, like, Freaky Tiki had this problem, one of my prototypes, and I actually stopped working on it because of that, because it annoyed me,
right?
Because it felt artificially balanced, right? It felt like, wow, everybody's just automatically going to be real. It's going to be a tight game.
If that's what it's going to be, the game is kind of playing itself. What am I doing here?
Right. Yeah. I think the problem is player elimination gets such a bad rap, Right? Because, I mean, that's basically what Andy's saying. Like,
yeah.
Not just player elimination, but, like, because there's two types of player elimination, right? There's actual elimination, where, like, Rob, your character is dead. You're out of the game, right? You're out. You cannot win. And then there's artificial elimination, or I guess passive elimination. Let's call it passive elimination. I like that term. It sounds good.
Okay.
Passive elimination is you're still playing the game, but it doesn't matter. Like, you are not affecting the game anymore. Maybe you could do something, you'd be a jerk to screw other people over, but you're not going to win. Mm-hmm. Everybody can tell you're not going to win. You might play the game for another 30 minutes. It doesn't matter. You're not going to win.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would rather just get knocked out of the game than artificially play another 30 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, knowing that I'm just going to lose. Yeah. So I personally think it's lame when games do that. But it's tough because publishers want you to keep players in. Like, you know, AJ and I talked a lot about this with Gunslinging Ramblers. This was an issue. Like, the way the game was set up, you could get knocked out. Like, you had to make some pretty bad moves to get knocked out, but you could get knocked out.
Yeah.
The way it's set up now, you should survive the whole game. Like, you should be able to play the whole game. You will not get eliminated.
Mm-hmm.
And you will feel like you have a shot throughout the entire game. You might not, but you'll feel like you have a shot. And you will also, in addition to that, you'll feel like, you know, like you could kind of shoot the moon to win. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If you make some really cool moves and do some good stuff towards the end. And it's designed that way so that it doesn't feel like the whole game, like, I'm losing. I'm losing and there's nothing I can do to win. Because it doesn't matter if you can win. It only matters if you feel like you can win. At least I think. I don't know if you agree with that or not.
Well, what I'm thinking about is how you measure during the gameplay who's winning and who's losing.
Right.
Like, okay, see, in my opinion, there's two ways to track the score in Ticket to Ride. You can track the score while you're playing. Every time you put trains down, you increase your score, and everybody can see where everyone's score is out on the board. Or you don't pay any attention to score as you're playing, and you just add up the totals at the end of the game. And I, Christine and I both really prefer it that way. Because if you get halfway through the game and one guy is halfway around the score track and the other guy is barely past the first, you know, that can be really discouraging and frustrating,
of course,
you know? And I think that is the kind of feeling that a lot of publishers and a lot of designers want to avoid. Right.
Catan is notoriously bad for that, actually.
Yeah, where you get halfway through the game, one guy's like, why am I even still playing? I know I'm out of this game, but I have to keep playing because I haven't been eliminated, which is what you were just talking about.
Right.
You know, so I think a lot of that can be addressed if you can make the scoring total at the end. That's something that I really like about Tea Party. Because all the scoring is done at the end. And a lot of people have tried to convince me to put things in there where you start tracking the score while you're playing, and I hate that idea.
That's a bad idea.
I really hate that idea because part of the fun of the game is that surprise at the end and trying to remember what you've got in your bag.
There's a slight memory mechanic to it, right? What's in Rob's stomach?
Yeah, to encourage some card counting.
Right.
You know, it's not required, but if you can do that, you might have just a little bit of an edge.
Meeple counting,
right. And I really, really, really prefer games that allow me just to look at the score when it's over.
Yep.
So that I can use my brain to keep track of other stuff.
Right. Stone Age does that really well too. Stone Age does a mixed version. I can see where we are in the score track, but like you can actually feel really like conniving and clever when I'm like, I'm down 20 points, but I know that I've got some wicked combos in here for the end. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they know I have those, you know?
And Ticket to Ride has that bonus as well, where, you know, you get to the end of the game and then you reveal your completed routes.
Right.
And that's cool. So there is still some of that, but we prefer the mystery. And another problem, of course, is keeping track of the score while you're playing is sometimes you just forget.
Yeah, that's annoying too.
And I have a problem with that because I get so focused on other stuff going on.
Right.
So I think that careful balancing that Andy's talking about is to avoid some of that player discouragement as you play. And like you said, publishers and designers are afraid of player elimination because that gets a bad rap. I mean,
yep.
That's one of the best parts of Risk, though. Risk, to me, is still one of the best games ever made.
I still argue that Water Balloon Washout, the player elimination, is one of the most fun things about the game because
absolutely,
then you're cheering on other people. Like, I mean, it's so fun. Like, and that was since the first time we played that game, That's been one of the most fun things. Even when you get knocked out, you don't care.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you love seeing everybody else get right, nailed. Right.
And then the other thing to think about is the tone of the game. I mean, is this game intended to be a strategy game, a real hardcore thinker, where strategies are important and developing right. strategies and repeated plays is an important thing to do? Or is this meant to be just kind of a casual, fun game that you sit back and relax?
Right.
So I would say back to Andy, you know, I haven't played this Augustus game, so I don't know.
But it's, I mean, I think it's...
It's
lighter fare. I mean, it's gamer bingo.
Yeah, you know, okay. So I just want to say back to Andy then, I want to make sure you're not expecting the wrong thing from the game.
Right. That could be too. Yeah, yeah. I mean, there are many games we've played before where after several plays, they're not as fun as they used to be.
Sure, because there's not that much there.
Right, yeah. And I mean, that's a great example of... Now, maybe it's still fun for them, but he's just saying, you know, there's no solid strategy to that's better than others. And that can be frustrating. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I mean, you want to feel like you can have an edge, you know?
Yeah, you want that, yeah. I think Takenoko actually is a game that does it really well. I mean, the casual play is super fun and super satisfying, but I think there's a lot of opportunity there for strategy, based on what cards you choose for scoring. So
cool. All right. So now we've got some epic, we got a final question we're going to have afterwards, but we got an email I want to read too.
Okay.
But now we've got some epic stuff from our friend Len, who called in a bunch.
Right. You need to talk about, first of all, the challenge that you put before Len.
Well, I didn't necessarily put this challenge before Len. I think Len created this challenge.
Oh, did he?
Len said... you guys keep talking about Dragon's Milk. I want to try Dragon's Milk. Mm-hmm. So he said, I'm going to find it. And it's a 4-pack, right? And I said, yeah. And he said, I'm going to call you, then I'm going to drink one, then I'm going to call you, then I'm going to drink one, then I'm going to call you, then I'm going to drink one, then I'm going to call you, and so on. And I said, Len, I wouldn't do that because Dragon's Milk is really strong and you shouldn't drink 4 of them.
Yeah.
And he said, no, 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 it'll be all right. So I actually haven't listened to these yet.
Yeah,
you have.
I've heard them because I had to do a little editing.
So
to start with, the first one, voicemail, he actually called us twice from the road as he was driving home from Grand Con, and the quality, it was just kind of a garbled, muffled mess. So let's go ahead and listen to a little bit of that one.
What up, BTG? Yeah, Wexford. How's it going? So I'm on my way home.
Yeah, so
that was a little hard to hear.
Yeah, there were a couple of those from the road, and I'm sorry, Len. It was too garbled. I tried to clean it up best I could, but it was just rough, and I really didn't know what you were saying through most of it. So we're gonna skip those, and then we'll move on now to after you got home, and I think this is the one that's labeled 2-1.
Yep.
BTG, Lenny Wexford. So we discussed me getting a 4-pack of Dragon's Milk. Reminiscent of, I believe it was like the first 5 or 6 episodes you guys did, talked about Jason's favorite beer. So as an experiment, I bought a 4-pack. I'm going to drink the 4-pack. Maybe tonight, this may end horribly. But I'm going to open the first one, so here we go. So there we go with the first one open. And let's take a sip. Oh, that's a damn good beer. It is really, really good. That's number one. That's the start. Sorry, this message is longer than 1 minute. Try to keep it in that time frame. But experiment on. Off to walk Doctor Who with the family.
So off to watch Doctor Who with the family. Congratulations on that. So beer number one, sounds like he liked it. I liked his first taste. Now let's move on to...
2-2.
BTG, Lanier Wexford, what up? Okay, so I'm about to crack open number 2. Here we go. I know Rob makes it sound really like it just happened. It didn't take like 25 seconds, but... So for number 2... Well, let me talk about number 1. I drank kind of slow. I almost slammed the thing because it was so delicious. And then I was like, well, I was told it had a lot of alcohol from J.A. And it does because I'm already feeling it. But for the second one, I'll read this back. It's a roasty malt character intermingled with deep vanilla tones, all dancing in an oak bath. It's delicious. Pairings, red meat, smoked food, balsamic. Rich cheese and dark chocolate. I think it's really good straight up with a little bit of food. food and very little sleep. It's a vintage 2014. It is 11% by volume. So I gave it to my wife because I really thought it had like a really chocolatey note to it. It was pretty awesome. And she started gagging on it. She's like, oh, my God, this is like a shot of whiskey. And then I explained to her what it was. I think it's very smooth. It's very good. So, we're going into number two. And while I'm drinking this, like I said, we're watching Doctor Who, episode 13, season 2. The one where dies. Sorry if I spoil that for anybody. And this is an excellent beer. Again, sorry for so long. It's probably going to get longer as the beers get goner. 1913 on Sunday, September 21st, 2014. When you work it out.
Just wait till you hear. I mean, this gets better, dude. It gets better. This is a journey that we've embarked upon with Len.
BTG, Linear Wexford. About to open beer number three. All right, so it looks like about 30 minutes of beer. It's going pretty good. All right. The podcast is in 15 minutes. We'll see how it all goes. And then we'll see what happens. Now, the interesting thing is, now I realize it's been, 11%, and it's been 60 minutes, two beers. This might be fully taking effect, although I really felt number one, so I have to assume I'm feeling number two right now, both 30 minutes. It's a good experiment. Yeah, so dead air makes for bad radio. I'll quit talking now. Get back to you in about probably 30 to 45 minutes. And then the podcast is done at 9. I'm going to watch HoboCon until 10 because it's my bedtime. And I will probably give one or maybe a final shout-out, see what's going on. TBD. Later.
All right. He's clearly losing some of his faculties there, I think. And
there's like four more of these.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is a journey that we're going to be going on here with Len.
BTG, Linear Wexford, what it is? So, finishing number four, started number four during the Something from Nothing podcast. I got it, I'm a little disgruntled. Jason changing the rules in the last 3 minutes. Say something funny. And then next thing you know, at the end, it's something about board design, which I didn't gather probably until it was four beers in, but that's a different story. Anyways, about to watch HoboCon. And I will give one final callback before I end the four Dragon's Milk experiment. Good night. No, goodbye. The next time would be good night.
And he's talking about we had a contest on Something from Nothing to give away a game, and people were not giving us enough feedback, enough things. So I said, all right, say something funny. Just You have 5 minutes left. Say something funny, and you win. And Jason Tagmeyer's funny thing was, it's funny to me that we can't even give away a board game on this podcast. And then he won.
That's pretty funny. That's pretty funny, yeah.
So,
all right, okay, it gets better, all right? We're getting to the serious stuff here.
All right. So, sorry about that whole beginning part. Rob, just you'll take care of that. I'm about to put into my DVD player HoboCon, and something tells me I should call you guys. So here we go. Here we go. Eject. Get inside. Go. Go. Okay. Here we go. Rob, you'll fix this. Or just not even include it in the podcast, which is probably, okay, I could be wrong. Here we go. It's great. You and Rob and Jason, here, just listen. Check with blue eyeliner. The it's an interesting cover. It's got like the same as the actual Hobocon cover, but there's like a live action scene in the background in this excellent acoustic place. Let's see what this worst idea they ever had was. I hear that.
So that was the DVD menu, the main menu for the Hobocon DVD. We should get Hobocon up on the store.
We should.
On the website.
I want to watch it again now. Yeah. After this. All right, we got a couple more.
Okay, it's all right. I mean, it's worth it, man. Trust me, it's worth it.
BGG, Linear Wexford. This would be the final call for the 4 and 24. Experiment that is for Dragon's Milk and me getting very little sleep in 24 hours. Hobocon, I watched the first 30 minutes. It's pretty good. Funny? Not really. I would say it's informative and accurate from what I've gathered so far. And to some extent, it needs to be a Hobocon 2. Now, I will say the one mistake you guys made was you trade your pins for, like, pizza, you traded your pins for a McChicken sandwich, and you traded your pins for a half a bag of Chex Mix. My opinion is you have to raise the bar, right? Is you have to raise the bar to say, dude, this is a button, it's worth something. Sorry, Rob. A half a bag of Chex Mix. I mean, seriously, come on. You know? The McChicken sandwich, maybe. But, I mean, in the first day, the beauty of it is it's exponentially increasing, which is a good thing, right? So, but that may lead to the more desperate you look, the more food you get. So maybe in the beginning, if you would look more desperate, he would give you a whole bag of Chex Mix. I don't really know. I do look forward to the rest of the show, though. But for now, I got to go to bed, so I got to get up in like 7 hours. Great podcast. Everything's good. Jason, love you, man. We're one and the same. You're a dick, and I'm a dick. So we're just two dicks. So, f*** you. Have fun, Rob. Bye.
Oh, my gosh. So,
Hobocon, not that funny, apparently.
That was great.
First 30 minutes, not funny.
There was some honesty there, so.
Yeah.
All right, we have two more. And
two
then,
more.
And then
it's
we're
good.
Moving on.
Yeah.
What up, BTG? It's Linear Wexford again at 2345. On September 21st, 2014. I want to go to bed right now, and I was just in bed. I was in bed. I was laying down. I couldn't fall asleep. I want to fall asleep. And I was thinking about game design. So I'm laying in bed, and I'm thinking about this. And I went back, and I watched some of the show where I asked a question about, you know, is an iteration always the same? Yada, yada, yada. This and that goes on. This is a little bit of alcohol. But in the end, there was a point where I started thinking, you know, I played Sandbox this weekend. I played Innkeeper this weekend. Innkeepers needs a new name. It doesn't invoke the Wild West, the what you're doing in the game, which I think is the problem there. Sandbox is excellent, but I think I realized when I was laying in bed, Sandbox is a game that needs to be, I don't know, like, play tested like 50 times by like 100 people to iterate because of all the different different iterations of each, you know, group and everything. But it's a solid game. Like, both those games are so freaking solid. I had fun playing them. Sandbox frustrated the shit out of me. Sorry, Rob. But it really did, because it's like I didn't know the powers before I got in there, but it's like every single other variable power, you know, it reminded me in a very abstract, in a very yinch way of, like, Summoner Wars. You know, you have these two factions or four factions or 12, whatever the f***, and they're fighting. The first time you shove them together and you fight, it's like you know what is going to happen. Yeah. So, anyways, I think I'm okay now. Sit with Hayden, as you said. I enjoyed the games thoroughly. Sandbox, good game, great game, needs playing. It needs to, and innkeeper, I think that's on the way home, Rob. Innkeepers, you know, you say you play test it, who else have you given the game to play test and come back to you and say, hey, in not almost a semi-blind play test, you know, just like, hey, play this game, tell me.
And it cut off there. I think the voicemail thing cut him off. He's right. The innkeepers is at a place now where it's I need to start getting it out. I need to get a print and play ready to go and accessible.
And a better name.
And I absolutely need a better name, yes.
And he's right about Sandbox. Sandbox needs a lot more testing and balancing, but yeah.
Yeah.
So thank you for the candor. Okay, right. just two more. Hang on with us.
BTG, when you're Wexford, I am currently sending the kids off to school. After last night's little experiment, not really sure how it went. Well, I guess it went okay. It really wasn't that bad. But you always say that when you wake up, you never, you know. It's like, I know everything I did, but do you really? Because you don't. Yeah, so watching HoboCon again. Start from the beginning because I did have the volume low, but you guys really don't care about that. And I got cut off, so good thing you have 3.5 minutes per phone call, the most someone can talk. And then it very politely tells you goodbye and hangs up on you. And now I will hang up myself. So goodbye. But I was serious about what I said yesterday about innkeepers. Need to change the name. And then Sandbox Showdown, comparing it to why I said the same thing twice. All right. Peace.
Okay, one more.
One more.
Last one.
BTG, Winter Wexford, what's going on? So I was listening to this week's podcast, which is 121, and in it Rob was talking about card game simulator, this card game, or how you guys are going to play it again because he's redesigned it, and I forgot that pitch completely because, you know, 120 pitches. We talked about this at Grand Con kind of. And then for some reason, I'm trying to avoid doing homework, so I went to the website, because that's awesome, and I figured I'd plug around. I was going to email Rob, but I can't find his email, because it doesn't exist. So now I'm just going to message him on Twitter. But so Rob, when you get this message on Twitter, you'll know exactly when I gave it to you, which, you know, not really special, but whatever. And so plugging around here, a couple things. You guys do not keep the website up to date, and I think one of the funniest things is it at the show notes, no home? You have something on here about timeliness? Like, we're going to, like, no, it's not it. There's a timeliness thing, right? And timeliness thing says we're going to be on time and do all these awesome things. We're going to be on time. And you guys are far, far from that. Other than keeping the podcast up once a week, which you're very good at. So I guess check. But everything else on here is definitely not timely or up to date. And I have 3.5 minutes. This may fill that one up. Dude, why not fix the website? Let me guess. Time, right? You don't have the time. And, yeah, that's probably going to be the answer. Anyways, I just happened to stumble across Card Game Simulator, the card game, the pitch, and I listened to it. It was like 4 seconds long. It seemed pretty interesting. So I'm actually quite interested in seeing that. I also was thinking about, Rob, you were talking about how you pitched Epic Monster Tea Party to a publisher, and the publisher wasn't really a big fan of the killing people part. Well, maybe it isn't all about killing people. Maybe some of the other resources could be that, other resources. And I just say that because, you know, giant monsters don't always eat humans. I mean, if you watch, you know, Rampage or some other monster movies and games, you know, they do destroy other things. So maybe it's like they collect their treasure and they're mixing it up to steep the tea, like a fine herbal tea, as instead to like a just straight black tea or just straight green tea. If that makes sense. You know, get a little tank in there. Obviously, one of them is still going to be a person because that's awesome, in my opinion, and that's thematic. I don't know. Take it, leave it. Whatever. Later.
Okay.
All right. So, we don't always have the episode list. It's probably talking about the sound list today. Yeah. The episode list, I do try and keep it up to date every once in a while, but I'm not super worried about it anymore because we used to have that for our back episodes.
Right.
But those are all on iTunes now.
Everything's on iTunes.
Nobody really cares. But I will update that at some point here. And
but when we talk about timeliness on there, I mean, and he's right. I mean, yeah. We could be better, but we've never missed an episode in posting.
Never.
In
even when we thought we might, we still haven't.
We still managed to pull it out.
Tree falls through Rob's car, still edits the episode, gets it up that
still
night.
Still got it done, right. So,
which, our big trick to that we've talked about before is that's why we publish on Sunday, but the publish date is Monday.
Technically,
because
officially.
That gives us a buffer.
And I think only one time have we ever pushed it to Monday.
Yep, and it was because I published it, but I didn't actually click publish.
You hit the wrong button. Yeah.
No, I published the episode, but I didn't link the sound file to it.
Oh, okay.
So the audio file wasn't in there, so it didn't post to iTunes. And one of our awesome listeners on Monday morning said, "Guys, where's the show?" And I was like,
"Yeah."
And I plopped it out there, and it was fine. Mm. So,
yeah. Regarding the comment on different resource types in Tea Party, I've thought about that. Obviously, though, if you're doing different shaped meeples in that case, or different shaped things in the bag, obviously you can just feel it with your fingers and know what you're grabbing. So everything needs to be the same shape. The next thought then is, oh, well, don't make them wooden meeples, make them cardboard tokens or something with something printed on them. And you absolutely could do that. And in fact, the component cost then would likely be a little bit cheaper than using wooden meeples. But as it stands right now, I really like the feel of the wooden meeples. And I think that's part of the charm of the game. So that's why I have shied away from that thus far. You could do the same thing with cubes too, and make the colors mean different things. But I think I just still really like the feeling of people, of little wooden meeples. So that's my comments on that. That was fun. We'll never do that again.
Yeah, that was fun, but that was a lot of recording. So
I mean, Len, thank you.
Yeah, co-hosted this week by Lenny or Wexford.
Don't do that again.
Yeah. We've completely run out of time. So we're going to skip the pitch this time. We've got a few emails. We're just going to save those for next time. One of the emails is all the way from Scotland, and it's a good email. So we're going to cover those next week.
We are out of time
after the feature. So thank you guys for doing that. We will continue to play voicemails, but we probably won't do a full voicemail episode because that was a lot of voicemails. And,
and we encourage you guys to call us drunk. That'd be really funny.
Yes,
do more of that.
And call us and swear because it's funny because Rob has to edit it out.
Yeah, so Jason loves that.
I do. So
if you were one of the callers in this episode and you found your voicemail edited a little bit or shortened, I apologize for that. But you know,
we got to do that for time. So much like TV, edited for content and time. Right. Rob will do his pitch challenge next week.
Next week, yep.
So get to look forward to that. Yeah. I will not let him take the boards home. I will make sure he has to do it on the fly.
I have more time to think about it now that I've seen it.
I'm confident you'll forget until you get back
I'm sure.
Again,
as soon as I walk out of this room, as soon as I hit stop recording on this computer in front of me,
you'll forget.
It's done.
So the good news is we don't have anything else to tell you, so we can wrap it up
can wrap it up. So thanks, everybody, for listening to the show. We appreciate it. If you want to get in touch with us, and like I always say, we encourage that, you can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can call the Google Voice number at 770-TEL-BTG. If you're overseas and don't want to mess with that, you can also, or just don't want to mess with that, period, you can record something on your home computer and email it to that email address. Likewise, you can follow us on Twitter at @podcastBTG. Jason is at J.A. Slingerlin. I am at @poorly_designed. Please go out and like us on Facebook and get in there on iTunes and give us a 5-star review and come on back next week when we'll be pitching again and doing a more regular type show, unlike this ridiculous experiment that we had tonight.
Thank you guys.
Thanks guys. Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
Sorry, Rob.